All right, we are ready. Make it happen.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Wednesday, November 18th, 2020 edition of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. Amy, can we get a roll call, please?
Director Ray Russum?
Here.
Director Linda Austin?
Here.
Director Jeff Lee?
Here.
Surprise, I'm going to ask Director Austin to lead us in the flag salute tonight.
Okay, great. Hand over your heart. I pledge and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Thank you. Under agenda review, does anyone have any reason to change the order of the agenda tonight?
No.
Okay, thank you. So we'll proceed as published. This takes us to item four. This is public comments on items not appearing on tonight's agenda. This is where the public can come talk to us about items that are within our jurisdiction. You have 3 minutes, and I will check in now with Amy and see if we have anyone in the queue who's raising their hand for item four.
We have a few members or attendees, but none of them have their hands raised.
Okay, then I will close public comment and take us to item five. This is approval of warrants, and, 5A, approval of warrants, and 5B, approval of meeting minutes of November 4th, 2020. Does anyone on the board have questions or clarifications to ask?
I have none.
Okay, then let's go ahead and open up. Thank you. Let's go ahead and open up public comment on item 5A or B. So members of the public, if you would raise your hand, if anyone's got anything to say.
I see one raised hand and it is April Dury. Did I let her in?
Yes, please.
All right. You are ready to talk, April.
Well, I just had one clarification on the warrants. Sorry, if you can hear me, I'll try to be louder. Can you not hear me?
It's really hard to hear you, Amy, if you could, or April, if you could maybe get closer or turn that up.
I'll try. Let's see. It's just one thing. It's the JanPro. It's under check 4934. I believe it should be 3924. It's just misnumbered.
Okay, we'll ask staff after we're done with public comments. So thank you so much for that. And anyone else want to raise their hand at this time?
I see no other hands raised.
Okay, thank you. So I'll give this back maybe to either Amy or Jeremy to address that question.
She is correct. It should be 4924. Thank you, April.
Okay, so at this time, I will close public comment and bring this back to the board for action and adoption.
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we approve the consent agenda with the correction as noted.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Can we get a roll call, please?
Chair Ray Russum?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Item 6A is a presentation and approval of fiscal year ending June 2020 financial audit.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. Tonight, the item before you is a presentation and approval of fiscal year ending June 2020, our financial audit. And it's recommended that the board receive a presentation on the audit report of the district's financial records by Moss, Levy, and Hartheim, the district's independent auditor. Resolve any questions, call for any necessary revisions, and final the 2019-2020 annual fiscal audit. And with that, I'll turn the item over to Alex Hom, who is our CPA and auditor, and he'll talk you through the district's annual audit. Alex?
All right. Good evening, everyone. As Jeremy said, my name is Alex Hom from Moss, Levy, and Hartheim. For the 1920 audit, we gave the district an unmodified clean opinion. There, in terms of the report itself, there's no major changes this year. thanks to COVID, a lot of the accounting pronouncements, the new ones, got pushed back about a year out. So one of the big keys for this year's financials, if you probably noticed in operating expenses, is kind of a glaring number where there's a negative $268,000 for OPEB expense. And the big thing with that was this year's actuarial for OPEB was the first year that showed the change in benefit terms that you guys had. So that change in benefit terms alone knocked the liability down about $400,000. And that, and coinciding with the usual what you would have in the actuarial, that would knock it down to the negative $268,000 for the OPEB expense. Other than that, there were no major findings. And then Amy and the staff were fantastic to work with. They know what they're doing. Any questions?
Thank you for that. Let's check in with the board. Director Austin, any questions?
I don't have any. I'm very happy to see the report.
And Director Lee, any questions?
No questions for me, just to appreciate the hard work.
I only have comments. So at this time, we will go ahead and open up to public comment and see if anyone would like to raise their hand to speak.
I see no hands raised.
All right, thank you. So we'll bring this back around to us, and I'll just go ahead and go since I'm the only one that didn't say anything. And I would just say that the two greatest words to hear on items like this is unmodified clean. And that's what I'm looking for in the executive summary. That's how I get through these things. So thank you so much for that. And even more importantly, I'm so excited that the board is now, and the sanitation district is now back on track in terms of these audits. I think this is the first one that is right on time in several years. So thank you. Thanks, Alex, for that. So thank you to everyone, not just Alex, but at the sanitation district, because this is what the public expects of us. And I'm so happy that this has happened. So with that, we will move forward to item six. No, we need to have a
motion.
Yes, thank you, Amy. Sorry, I started forwarding. So maybe if Director Lee or Austin can bail me out because I moved my cursor.
I'll make a motion that we accept the presentation. We approve the fiscal year ending June 2020 financial audit.
I will go ahead and second that.
Thank you. Any discussion? We have a motion and a second. Can we get a roll call, please?
Director Linda Austin?
Yes.
Director Jeff Lee?
Yes.
Chair Ray Ressam?
Yes.
Motion approved.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Have a good rest of the night, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you again, Alex.
Boy, so much work went into that for Alex for a very short presentation. Thanks, everyone. Okay, so this takes us to item 6B. This is resolution number 2020-424 for execution, delivery, and sale of wastewater revenue certificates of participation and increasing maximum authorized amount thereof to $28 million. Administrator Gent.
Good evening, Jeremy Jen, District Administrator, and I have a PowerPoint presentation to kind of walk through the lengthy staff report. It is organized a little bit different. It's all the same material in the staff report, but just for flow, I've changed some of that order, but I'll go ahead and share my screen and get started with that. I'm missing, there we go. Can everybody see that okay?
Yeah.
So the item before you is for execution and delivery and sale of wastewater revenue certificates of participation and increasing the maximum authorized amount thereof to $28 million. This is item 6B on the agenda tonight. And here's a little presentation outline that so you'll know the order of which I'll be talking through these things, and I'm happy to answer questions along the way. But take a look here and you can see kind of what I'm going to talk about. So first I'll just cover the recommendation like a normal staff report, cover the background. We'll introduce the bid numbers that we received, talk about the adjusted estimate on what we would have expected the bids to see, then go over the bid results in detail, talk about some project complexities, and then we'll go look at the district's rates and whether the rates have capacity to cover the costs. And then I want to talk a little bit about the lost bidders during the bid process. That, you know, as you know, the district pre-qualified five bidders. We received two bids, and I want to cover some of that for your board. And then talk a minute for a minute about the spread between bidders and what this is about. So between the high bid and the low bid, there's a difference. And so we always look at that to say, is there anything missing in the bid? Did somebody identify something and not the other? So I'll talk about that briefly. And then a final staff opinion on where we're at with the project. And then finally, the resolution. So the recommendation is to adopt resolution number 2020-424, replacing resolution 2020-423 for the execution, delivery, and sale of wastewater revenue certificates of participation, and increasing the maximum of principal amount to $28 million. And the note below is meant to just draw your attention. Tonight's action is not awarding the contract. And as you know, there will be a forthcoming award process that we'll be bringing to the board on December 16th, where we'll actually issue a notice of award for the selected contractor. And some of the discussion tonight will cover some of that same material. And I just wanted to clear up any confusion. The action tonight is specifically to increase the amount of request for funding to be able to move forward with the project, and is not actually awarding the contract. But we do have to cover some of the bid results, but the bid analysis is not completed, and we're not recommending award at tonight's meeting. So a little bit of background. At the last meeting on November 4th, the board adopted resolution 2020-423, which confirmed the execution, delivery, and sale of wastewater revenue certificates of participation and approved the preliminary official statement and related documents. The adopted resolution confirmed a maximum principal amount of $25 million for the certificates of participation. And then on November 10th, last Tuesday, the district received two bids for the project, as summarized in the table on the next slide. And the apparent low bid is $26.9 million from Phelan Construction. And that bid result is, if we're to move forward, would require an increase in the authorizations for bond sale by $3 million up to $28 million. This slide appears twice in the presentation tonight, once just to cover here and once after I explain all of it to show it again. Back in April of 2019, Kennedy Jenks finalized the plans and specifications for the redundancy project and issued an engineer's estimate of $21.3 million in April of 2019. Because of escalation and some changes during bidding and information responding to the risks that were observed during our risk analysis and some answers to constructability during the bid, there were some additional costs that have been captured, which had the district's expectation of the project cost around $23.7 million. And then you'll see that Phelan's bid was $26,939,042. With PCL Construction coming in at $30,465,303. So I wanted to talk about the adjusted estimate and what was added from 2019, that last estimate that was provided with completion of the construction documents. So the main component was the delay. The project was delayed by approximately 19 months since that estimate was issued. And so the inflationary costs of, and I'll go quantitatively through that in the coming slides, but 19 months of inflation was anticipated and justified for, you know, increasing the 21.3 million. There was some minor added scope, these next two items. There's coating of the exterior surfaces of the primary and secondary digesters. This is a coastal development permit condition. And initially the district had set out that is not infrastructure that's otherwise being touched during construction of the redundancy project. And so the district had initially anticipated doing that under a separate contract with a dedicated contractor that specialized in the coating. But as we got into the coastal development permit and what consisted of the project, it made sense to, in conjunction with the community workforce agreement, and what to eliminate any disputes of what was project work, it was decided that this $142,000 effort should be moved, instead of being held separately, should be combined with the redundancy project to ensure that the community workforce agreement got to cover that work, because it did seem to be covered in that agreement. So additional cost to the, that wasn't covered in the estimate, but it was always a cost the district was going to incur. Additional added scope was a new 24-inch gate valve. During a constructability review, there was an analysis done on whether the district would be able to isolate portions of flow surrounding the fixed film reactor. And based on Michael Jones and staff's analysis on what our ability with existing valving to do to isolate that, we would not be able to adequately and reliably isolate that. And so it, we had to add a 24-inch gate valve on that line. A couple additional adjusted items. There's a lot of words here. I won't read them in verbatim here. But protection of existing utilities and structures. And so the project was developed, the plans and specifications were developed with the performance specification for settlement around existing utilities and structures. And what I mean by performance-based is the contract required the contractors to monitor the existing elevation of all these structures, and then monitor for any type of settlement during construction of the soil stabilization. Underground pipes and the clarifiers and buildings in this area could be susceptible for some settling. And so that needs to be monitored to make sure that it's not happening. One of the challenges with a performance-based spec is it often ends up resulting in varied bid numbers coming in, because contractors will accept or try to mitigate different levels of risk when they do this. So one contractor might say, we're just going to monitor it and we're not going to do anything to stabilize it. And another contractor might say, oh, well, we need to spend $500,000 doing all this stabilization to make sure that no settlement occurs. And so to avoid these type of discrepancies and end up with potential apples and oranges in analyzing the bid results, the district and our geotechnical designers, along with Kennedy Jenks, we got together and met and said, okay, what would a baseline look like for stabilization on these? And this was the compaction grouting component that was included in the bid. Now, we always anticipated that the contractors would have a cost associated with this, but what this effort did was make them show us what that cost was going to be. It establishes a unit price that if there's any change orders, the district's in a better position to negotiate those change orders, because we already know in a bid environment what the cost of a per foot of this type of compaction grouting stabilization would cost. And I know I spent a little bit of time on that, but that's, it's important to know, what benefit the district is receiving from that additional cost. The dewatering treatment and performance. And again, this language is the same language that you'll see in the staff report. In typical construction projects, contractors would have access to a general construction discharge permit through the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Discharging water from a wastewater treatment plant site has some unique risks that would suggest that a better level of monitoring and compliance be obtained before discharging straight to another body of water. And so during the development of our permit to discharge this water and to avoid running all of it through the treatment plant, we got permission from the Regional Water Quality Control Board to bypass treatment and discharge the water through our ocean outfall, but with some monitoring to show that there is compliance with the existing NPDES permit that the district has, and that all permit conditions are in compliance with that dewatered groundwater. And so that additional monitoring that when the contractor sees that and he knows that he's going to have to monitor this water and potentially alter or make some modifications could have added cost that's difficult to quantify from an engineering standpoint of what kind of impact that may have had to the bid results. So this slide kind of walks through those previous six items and gets to the modified total that we would have kind of anticipated seeing on the bid results. So, starting in April with the $21.3 million, we have inflation for the 19 months. That amounted to about $1.2 million. The digester coating work that was anticipated to be in a different contract was pulled into the redundancy contract. That was $142,000. That additional gate valve to be able to accommodate the construction was an additional $28,500. The utility and structure protection, again, these are ranges on what you might expect the stabilization bid to come in at for doing that compaction grouting. It is a range of potentially $100,000 to $300,000, and that's not all visible to us exactly right now. And so on the dewatering side, those additional complexities could have potentially added to $300,000 to $400,000 to the bid price. And then there's markups on all of those things because of all the soft costs associated with doing this type of work that out of the $1.2 million, the $142,000, the 100 to 300,000 and the 300 to 400,000. If you add the markups, and again, this is in the staff report as well, that markups at, the $225,000 to the $350,000 range, giving us a total expected bid result to be around $23.7 million. This is that slide again. So again, the April of 2019, $21.3 million. November 2020, $23.7 million. And then we have Phelong's bid at $26.9 and PCL's at $30.4 million. So the low bid is being higher than the estimate. So the $26.9 million is approximately 14% above the adjusted estimate. And so one of the things I have to do is make sure that the district's spending money in a financially sound way. And so the team sat down and said, okay, is there merit? Like, do these bid results make sense? Or, are there complexities? This is a performance-based project, so there are shared risks from the district and the contractor, and some unknowns, and those get priced in a little bit differently. And so we wanted to evaluate those to make sure that that we could make a final recommendation. So the project complexities, the So we have some exposure to endangered species that was, you know, not necessarily priced into the engineer's estimate. As the project completed design, as the board may recall, that the district was informed that we had to go through a formal consultation process with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in regards to the California red-legged frog. And so that additional monitoring, and that's not the cost, that's the monitoring is captured elsewhere. But from the contractor's standpoint, you know, you add in this monitoring, you do have the potential of a work stoppage. And so that can add an incremental cost to the project. So that wasn't necessarily included in that initial $21.3 million. The pandemic is totally new from that number. So the district undertook a literature review, and there is good literature. I can't say that it's good, but there is established literature in the construction market that is suggesting that pandemic pricing is causing approximately, they're seeing a 4.5% increase in bid numbers because of the uncertainties. Because you could have work disruptions, additional isolation keeping social distance during construction, the additional PPE that's required. You could have quarantines or even a full job shutdown if a breakout got bad enough. And so these uncertainties for a long duration project certainly add cost to the project. Global material pricing and supply disruptions. And some of that was priced into the project. Kennedy Jenks, on the global material, the United States has been in a little bit of a tariff war with China. And so that has increased the price of raw materials, such as steel largely. And that added about $1 million to the project, but that was included in the $21.3 million. However, the 2% that is being referred to here is the supply disruptions that kind of ties back to item number two, which is the pandemic. But there are supply disruptions right now, and you cannot always get stuff on time. And so those disruptions are also playing into the bid environment right now for construction. The community workforce agreement back in August of 2019, the district spent several meetings covering the pros and cons and the value of having a community workforce agreement, and that you know, staff, there is likely an added cost. The research revealed that rule of thumb is 1-3% for any type of project labor agreement to implement that, and so that was not captured in the construction cost. And then the district added pre-qualification in the project during the delay for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And pre-qualification can add an incremental cost, but it definitely adds value. And we talked about an incremental cost increase, where the pre-qualification, you're selecting the highly competent contractors, but you are reducing your potential competition. And so there often is an incremental increase. And so if we add all those up, we get to, okay, maybe there's 10.5% of uniqueness and complexities that were not priced into the original technical estimate that Kennedy Jenks provided for us. So now moving on to rates a little bit. And I know this is probably a question for everybody, is like, do we need to increase rates? And Alex Handlers is also on the call, and he's available to answer questions on this. But based on bid results, it's necessary to increase from the $25 million to the $28 million. But the district will not have to increase rates to award the project. And with that, would you like to speak for a moment, Alex, on this item?
Sure. Yeah, Jeremy, that's exactly right. you know, the project costs a little more, so you have to borrow some extra funds, which is why we're here to ask for the additional authorization. I don't think we're going to need to borrow all the way up to $28 million, although that's the kind of the dollar amount we want to generate out of this, including the money that's going to be interim financing for the USDA loan. But, you know, so we're estimating it'll probably result in, you know, roughly $300,000 of additional debt service. But the rates that were adopted, and because the project got delayed a bit, you're able to apply a significant chunk of cash to the project, that the rates that were adopted should be adequate for, you know, a few more years. In our projections, again, they're only projections, we are estimating that, you know, sometime after the project is complete would be a good time to kind of review the rates after you kind of get the operating costs for the new improvements dialed in. And, you know, you might need some inflationary increases in later years, but the good news is your rates are starting out from a very low place. And at most, we're seeing inflationary rate increases out in a, you know, a handful of years or so. So good. I do have another, can I chime in with a little bit more good news, I think, that bodes well. I mean, all the numbers we're using so far have been like estimates for the financing, and we try to err a little on the conservative high side. But you just are about to get a rating from Standard & Poor's, which is double A minus, which is very good. It puts you in the double A minus category. And that's helpful for the sale of the certificates of participation, and will, you know, result in slightly lower issuance costs and also negate the need for some expenses that we had thought that might be needed. So that should help as well. I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Thanks, Alex. So as to just continue elaborating on what Alex said, if you look at current rate structure, this graph illustrates where the district currently sits. And I find this an important part of this story is it does show that the district is in a good financial position. And in fact, we have the lowest wastewater rates in the county. You can see Santa Maria and Solvang, make it into the mix, but those are both located in Santa Barbara County. And these are the current adopted rates as we're at about $28 a month, and then the collection, the municipalities add on, you know, $7 to $8 a month for their collection fees on the collection system. This graph kind of just outlines what the district's cash on hand has been over the past decade, and you can really see since 2014 that cash position has improved. And you can notice in 17, 18, and then in 2019, our phased in rate increases for the redundancy project had been fully implemented. And you can see between 19 and 20, our cash position improved by $2.8 million. So this $10.6 million in reserve is a good financial position to be in. It's part of the reason we got the double A minus rating from Standard & Poor's. And, you know, this is something that we want to continue to protect and have good a financial approach to managing the district's finances and expenses. Alex already touched on this. The graph below is a little bit small. It's also in the attachment in the financial analysis that's attached to the staff reports. But it really illustrates that there's no plan, you know, no indication for rate increases in the next 3 years. And then we start moving into inflationary type increases in the future years of potentially 3 to 4%. And some of that will be, as Alex alluded to, looking back on right now, we're estimating about the operational costs of running the new infrastructure at about $500,000 a year. Those are operational expenses are extremely difficult to estimate. That's a conservative estimate. It'll likely, that would be an area where it'd likely be lower, unlike on the construction costs where costs continue to go up. on operational costs. The $500,000 is probably a solid number. And so as we start actually running this equipment, we'll actually know the costs and we'll be able to make a recommendation at that point. And final construction costs will be known if there was any change order or anything that impacted the construction costs. We'd be able to set rates to accommodate that in those future years once the costs are known. So the loss of bidders, for me, that was probably the more disappointing, that we didn't have at least a third bidder on the project. And because having a robust bid environment instills confidence. And so we have to take a little bit of a different approach with where we're at. But I want to talk about the reasons why we pre-qualified five bidders. They all participated on the construction side. They were quite pleasant to work with. They all visited the site, did tours with myself or Eileen Shields, walked through, asked all the questions they might have of construction laydown, exporting material. And we got good feedback during that period of time. And so we received bids from Phelonk and PCL, Phelonk being the apparent low. And then Shimmick Construction withdrew because of limit of liability language. And I'll talk about that in upcoming slides, along with WM Lyles. And Shimmick indicated concern with some contract language early in the process. And then WM Lyles exited in the I believe it was the last week of bidding. And it was due to the language that's protective of the district's position on the project. And then the fifth contractor, Pacific Hydrotech, withdrew due to compatibility issues with their business model in the community workforce agreement. And I'll talk about that also following this slide. So the limit of liability language, so the red text here is the actual contract language that the contractor had concerns with. And so limitation of liability, the contractor stipulates that it has carefully reviewed the contract documents and finds them fit and sufficient for preparations of its bid and for construction of the work. Contractor agrees that neither the contractor nor any of its employee subcontractors or suppliers will make claim against the owner, the design engineer, or any other agents, consultants, officers, employees, shareholders, or for damages on this project, such that the total aggregate liability, including the attorney's fees and costs to the owner, the design engineer, and all their agents, consultants, and officers, employees, and shareholders shall not exceed the greater of $50,000, which does not apply here, or 5% of the contract price. During the bid, the district received the request from Shimmick to delete this language. And so the project, that was part of an RFI, a request for information, and the project team and district legal counsel reviewed and we considered the request. But the team unanimously concurred that removing the language would increase the potential risk to the district. And we provided that response to the contractors that that standard language would remain in the contract. And we ultimately lost two bidders over maintaining that protective language for the district. The community workforce agreement, the district adopted the CWA to ensure that local workers are assigned a large share of the project construction. The executed agreement was shared and explained to the bidders during the pre-qualification process. But unfortunately, Pacific Hydrotech contacted the district during the last week of bidding and indicated that after their review, they would not be able to accommodate the number of employees they wish to employ on the contract and had to withdraw because of that. So in this case, I would say that, part of that's an intentional part of the community workforce agreement. The community workforce agreement wants these contractors to hire a largely a local workforce to deliver this project. And in this case, the contractor Pacific Hydrotech wanted to bring in their employees from out of town, which is typical and fair, but it did not meet the district's intention to ensure that we provided opportunities to a local workforce to participate in the project. Spread between the bidders, right after we saw the results, there was about $3.5 million difference between the two bids. And as I mentioned briefly, there's always a quick reflection. And this is part of the more detailed bid review. We look at this type of stuff and we're out in front of this because we had to get the bond authorization. But we started immediately since last Tuesday to try to figure this out so I could present this to the board. Phelonc was proactive after the bid because, you know, they also became aware that there was a $3.5 million discrepancy, and they immediately got on the phone and called John Wyckoff with Kennedy Jenks and said, hey, we're very comfortable with our bid. No concerns about the difference in bids. Our numbers sound and solid. And there's an attached letter in the back. I had to shrink it down to show it here, but Bob Zeiser from Phelonc was kind enough to send this letter to show that, you know, Phelonc does feel confident in their bid and is in a position to move forward if they're ultimately selected. So staff opinion. So staff recommends that the district proceed securing adequate funding to continue advancing the project. The unique complexities on the project justify much of the higher bid as being potentially reasonable. So in my mind, I think we're in a good financial position to make this decision. We did meet to talk about alternative paths forward, and you know, one that may have already came to your head is should we rebid the project? And that option is not recommended. And largely that's because the options to rebid would result in further delay, and we would incur those inflationary costs. In addition to just the administrative costs of packaging and rebidding those would all be direct expenses. And additionally, in order to receive any potential savings or reduction in the bid, we would need to remove either project scope or assume more project risk. As we talked about, if we shrunk the project, that would removing scope would reduce functionality of the redundancy system. And we wouldn't be fully redundant. So there's not a path where we can reduce the scope on the project. And then assuming more project risk, while it may lower the bid results, it does not necessarily reduce the financial exposure that the district has on the project. And finally, that we're in a sound financial position to deliver the project at the apparent low bidder's price. Complete analysis of the bid and the recommendation is anticipated to be presented to your board on December 16th. The resolution 2020-424 is necessary to finance project construction. It will have to increase by $3 million, the maximum principal amount of the certificates of participation from $25 million to $28 million. The attached resolution to the staff report is before you to authorize this amount and will replace resolution number 423-2020. And with that, I'm happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you so much. That was a great report and included information that we had not seen. So I really appreciate all of the information that was in there. Let's see if the board has questions. I'll start with Vice Chair Lee.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So, and thank you, Jeremy, for that report. I did have just a couple questions, and completely understand and appreciate your breakdown of what the changes or the potential increases are based upon the bidding environment. And in my in my my other life as a professional engineer, we've been seeing increases of those percentages and more, significantly more on projects. So I understand from that perspective. So my questions basically center around potential savings, which could be construction timing, which could relate to a savings for dewatering. Is there any discussions, or will there be discussions to schedule construction timing such that some of the actions such as dewatering might be reduced or mitigated?
We did not, and you're right. So what Director Lee is alluding to is the seasonality of the rain year changes the dewatering amount. And so we could potentially stagger that. This is a 30-month long project. We did not hem the contractor into a particular season on the dewatering because that does impact his method of delivering. And in most cases, it would likely be that these excavations would extend or could extend into the rainy seasons, just because the magnitude, the construction, a lot of the construction is largely below grade. With our secondary clarifier, it's a big tank, kind of half above ground, half below ground, and the two aeration basins, the same thing, half above, half below. And so with so much of the work being centered around excavation, trying to pull it into a 9-month window to do that work on a 30-month long project was not something that we could, from an engineering standpoint, ensure that all contractors would be able to deliver.
Very good. I appreciate that explanation. So my next question is either for you or for Mr. Handlers. Realizing that the apparent low bid is about $26.9 million, and so based upon the liability document that you had expressed of that $50,000 or 5% of the bid price, 5% for claims and so forth or contingency on the project takes us above the $28 million that we're asking for. So just wanted to make sure from a financing standpoint that $28 million is adequate when it comes to the bond amount, the USDA amount, and our district reserves.
So that, and I will give Alex an opportunity, but to specific, the $28 million only represents the borrowed money. So the district is putting in about $5.5 million of district funding to the project as well. And that's where you'll see that difference made up. So there is the 5% that you're seeing there, that's a claim that's on the claim side and is not really part of the project budget, but there is it's a unique number, a 12.48% construction contingency included in the overall project costs and included in the $28 million. So the construction will be able to take place with the uniqueness of the 12.48% is we're 15% contingency on the high risk items, and the high risk items is the earthwork, the underground stuff that's a little bit difficult to know. So we have a 15% construction contingency on that, and on the above ground stuff we have a 10% contingency on that work. And so when you combine them, it averages out to a 12.48%. You might as well say 12.5% contingency fund. Alex, is there anything you want to add on that?
No, I mean, the district's already applied some cash to the projects in prior years, and there's more cash coming that you've accrued thanks to the rate increases that have kicked in. So I think you'll be in good shape. At the end of the day, I only think you're going to be issuing about $26 million of bonds as a face value, but it should generate about $28 million in proceeds just due to the way bonds get priced these days. But with the contingencies, you should be fine. I will say, I mean, there could always be some, complete unknown something out there that requires additional funding. But I think you're in good shape with the contingency there. And if it's not needed, ultimately it would just mean the district would carry a little bit more cash and could, at some point down the line, start paying debt earlier or have funds for other projects.
Very good. Thank you for that explanation, because it also kind of shows the difference between construction funding and project funding, and kind of identifies where all of those different different sources of funds come from, and we're able to use them in productive fashion. So those are my questions at the moment. Appreciate the report. And while I do see Mr. Zaiser from Fidlank on the line, I'd love to have a conversation with him about how he put his bid together, but this is not an appropriate time to ask those questions. So I'll turn it back to the chair.
Thank you very much. Director Austin, any questions of staff?
I don't. Obviously, I'm disappointed in the lack of the competition that we in the bids, but I don't have any questions. I'm just the explanations and everything I understood as to what the extra costs will be, and I guess we'll just go from here.
Okay, thank you. I have a few questions. Jeremy, is there any chance or any ballparking you can do? I mean, you've been asked to do a lot of ballparking on this staff report, and I know that we're just kind of trying, right? But my question is, is there any kind of rule of thumb of what a delay and a rebid might potentially cost? For example, I guess what I'm adding in, the things that right away come to my mind are cost of materials and cost to borrow money and inflation. And if you add those ones that we kind of have knowns, because the unanticipated ones for the most part are still going to be there, do you have any idea what it would cost to delay, say, 6 months or a year for rebidding?
We could develop that. And so the 19-month delay was about $1.2 million. And we could back that out and say, you know, right here on air live, just pro rata share of that, you're at $700,000 for a 6-month delay. And so you would have to be confident that rebidding would reduce the results by that $700,000. And that doesn't even cover the complexity, the potential concerns over that the USDA funding source might not be an issue, but delaying, you know, we'd have to communicate with them. What's that mean? And making sure that the funding wasn't at risk because of a rebid. I don't anticipate it would be, but that hasn't been directly answered yet.
Great. Thank you. I hadn't thought about working it backwards like that. Thank you. That was very obvious, and I'm feeling a little dumb for not seeing that. Thank you. My second question is, it's just more of a budgeting question. So we added a project we were already planning to do, which is the coating on the digesters 1 and 2, the primary and secondary. So I presume that we have now backed out of our planning and capital projects any budgeted amount that we had for that.
Correct. And so and the coating is not a maintenance item. The coating is to change the color of the digesters. In the visual analysis and the environmental impact analysis for the project, or that was an environmental impact report, but it was a CE. The Coastal Commission noted that the digesters were visible from Highway 1 and wanted the colors changed from white to either a green or a sand. And we're just, it's a coastal condition in our development permit. And so because that wasn't really associated with redundancy, it didn't make sense to have, you know, a heavy construction contractor, you know, paint the outside of the digester. We could probably do better by hiring a painting contractor explicitly. But once we started reviewing that route, I think it was Eileen Shields pointed out to me, like, hey, check out the community workforce agreement. And it does say all project related items covered. And so it's there could be a disagreement, and it wasn't worth any type of disagreement. We're like, just move that. We were spending it anyways. Let's have the heavy construction contractor do that work. And then all the work is under the community workforce agreement.
Okay, great. Thank you. There's a discussion in the staff report about our our OE reserves being at 160-something%. What's our policy on that?
Alex, help me. It's much lower than that. Is it? We have a low reserve limit, and we put some of that together for our preliminary official statement in S&P. Was it 25%, Alex? Are you still on?
You're muted.
Here we go. So I was on mute there. Sorry. I'm forgetting the specific amount, but I just remember from seeing it, I think you have kind of like an old fund reserve, you know, policy out there that has a minimum amount of like 20% or something like that, which is pretty low, especially if you're now going to be transitioning to a billing on the property tax rolls where you get most of your money twice a year. So what the good news is, you have a lot of reserves now because you did those few years of rate increases to support this project, even though at the time we thought the project would cost less and there would be state revolving fund loan financing. You know, the project's costing more, you have to take on more debt. What's helping mitigate that is the fact that you do have these large fund reserves. You're going to draw them down to some degree. And the goal is to keep roughly a year of, you know, expenses in reserves going forward, which is, you know, it's a healthy level. Some agencies have more, some agencies certainly have less, but that's a healthy level. And that also, you know, the financial metrics that they're looking at also helped you, you know, get a AA- rating, which is helping keep the financing down. And that's another thing you mentioned. If you delay the project, maybe you end up with a lower cost, maybe you don't. But the other wild card is the financing. Most of this project cost is going to be financed by debt. So really, what are you going to be paying? It's your debt service at the end of the day, regardless of what the project cost is. So, you know, right now, interest rates are extremely low, close to their all-time historic lows. They may stay where they are, even go lower in the future, but you start to take on interest rate risk as well if you delay a project. So sorry for a double answer there.
So, Jeremy, going back to the reserves question, it sounds like our reserve policy needs to be updated based on what our goals are and what old school reserves look like and what we might want to do in the future. So I wanted to put that out there, that may be a policy change that we need to look at going forward. Okay, so there's that. And I just kind of want to point at you, Jeremy, and at Amy, and at our staff, and ask, I want you to answer this. I want this to be a not technical question, which is, how much of good governance and good administrator work goes into that AAA- rating? Come on, just say it.
Well, you know, I think part of it has been a lot of work. You know, there's the past few months trying to move. This is a big project for a small district. You know, there's a lot of communication that had to go into answering S&P its questions on getting that rating. So they want to know details like about, you know, how the districts ran. And so they are asking, those type of questions and looking at our audits and, you know, making sure that we have these policies. So I don't know how to quantify it, but, you know, is
I'm
it a letter grade?
Quantify it. I don't want a quantification. I want you to just accept the fact that you're doing a great job.
Thank you, Karen. And yeah, and thanks for mentioning Amy on that as well. And also a shout out to Eileen, because they've put a lot of work on the financial side, especially into the project. And so that should be noted.
Thank you. And I want to make sure that we tie that back into a delay and a potential change to that rating and all of that. So there's method to my madness there, and not just trying to happily embarrass you, but to really point to all of this runs together. And this entire, I mean, maybe I'm getting into a little bit of commentary here, but this, you know, the unqualified clean that we got earlier and the fact that we're on track with our audits, all of those things factor into this project going forward. So with that, I am done with my questions. So let's just go ahead and open up public comment. There has been a raised hand for quite some time, so I can see that there, but I have no control over it. So Amy, I will turn it over to you to handle the public comment.
Okay, our first speaker is Eric Christian.
Good evening, directors. My name is Eric Christian. I'm the executive director of the Coalition for Fair Employment and Construction. We're the organization that, along with other organizations, has been spending more than a year educating you on what the inevitability of a project labor agreement would mean for your bids and for your costs, and now you're dealing with them. Director Russom and Lee, you voted for it. This was a project labor agreement that you supported. You paid off big labor special interest by approving it. Director Austin saw the writing on the wall and wisely voted against it. And now you're dealing with the consequences of it. The editorial that we'll be running tomorrow in the paper points this out. You need to be held accountable for your craven desire to support big labor special interest over what's best for all workers. Need I remind you that the project labor agreement you voted for forces non-union employees to pay into union health, welfare, and pension plans they will never vest in, forces them to use not their apprentices, but union apprentices, forces them to be reduced to the number of employees they will be using. Your staff has admitted it has cost you a bitter. The costs are what was predicted. It's easy to demonstrate what PLAs will do. They reduce bitters because they increase costs by making it more difficult for the majority of the industry that happens to be union-free, keeps them from bidding. This is basic economics. And you were warned, and now you're dealing with the consequences. So we just wanted to point it out again, what a project labor agreement is costing a particular district. This is a self-inflicted wound, and it's something you should be held accountable for. I do not understand why you put big labor special interest ahead of common sense, what you're being forewarned about, and the vast majority of your local employees who happen to be union free. Unions would get a lot of this work. Ask Falonk what their opinion is on project labor agreements. I know what it is. Ask them what their opinion is on PLAs. They don't want a PLA. They think they're unnecessary. That's something that should have been done before you rushed into this, not after the fact. Thank you for your time.
Are you ready for our next speaker?
I turned control over to you.
Okay, our next speaker is Jack Edwards.
It's actually Julie Tacker.
Oh, lovely.
Sorry about that. I didn't know that. When was he on this computer? Good evening, Julie Tacker. And I just want to kind of second what Eric Christensen just said. In my terms, it's I told you so, and we told you so when you were entertaining the project labor agreement, and that it could result in a higher cost project. I'm really disappointed that there's only two bids, and I'm very uncertain about the Finlance bid. I've done some research on them, and I just don't think, you know, I can write a letter and tell you that my bid is good. That's what Mr. Finlance did. I don't trust that. I think, you know, we've seen it, we've heard about it, where the low bid comes back, you know, a third of the way through the project and needs change orders to get to the same price as the other bidder. So I'm worried about that for you and your ratepayers. I'm worried that you've already sunk millions of dollars into this, and that if you add it all up, you've gone over $30 million, and you're a third of the way to maybe a new sewer plant in a new location. Brand new technology, state of the art, and you're still going to limp along with the components that are at the current site, and you're required to move it. So take that money and move it. And don't do this. I don't want to see you do this. The graph that shows the different communities' sewer rates, your graph for sewer is really only for treatment for your communities. Each one of your you're shaking your head, Jeremy, and I appreciate that. If that does include the city side, then you guys are low, but that doesn't mean that you're willing to pay more. Just because you have the lowest rates, it's because you have the most people and you serve economies of scale. So, but there's no reason that you need to make it more expensive and just try to show that you're the lowest because you don't have the state-of-the-art services. So, and then of course the Los Osos bar caught my eye. It's half the size of what it should be. And then when you did the history on the finances for the community, for the district, $1 million defending Wallace and $1 million throwing in the towel is just missed opportunity. That money could have gone to a project a whole lot sooner at a whole lot less price. So good night and thank you for your hard work. I'd actually like to see you rebid.
That was the end of our speakers.
Okay, at this time, I'll close public comment. We did have a couple of questions there, Jeremy, so I'll pose them to you to let you respond to them. Basically, the question was, could we have done a new project moving that with this money? And we've answered this question ad nauseum, but maybe you could briefly respond to it.
Yeah, and Director A. Russell, this is typical. Like on projects like this, there's always going to be some look backs at hindsight, and that's a challenge that long lead time projects always face, is to delivery in the face of that. Well, wouldn't have been better if we would have just made a different decision in the past. On the cost side, a third of the way there, yeah. Maybe we're 25% of the way there, but I will say even construction projects such as a new sewer plant, you know, we could say right now that would be $140 million to build a new one, but the same thing likely happens going through development where you'll see cost escalation on a project like that, where that creeps up by percentage year over year as the project gets developed. Our site is not worn out. We are not required to move. That's the other thing I want to speak directly to, is that there often is a mischaracterization that the Coastal Commission requires the district to move. The Coastal Commission has required the district to analyze moving the plant in 30 years. It does not require the district to move the plant in 30 years. So that's where you get a little bit of a disconnect. And so if that was the actual condition, is that we had to move in 30 years, I would be having a different discussion with you right now. But we've got value. The community's already paid for this plant. We can keep it running for a $30 million investment. The project investment. And that's value to the community. And in 30 years or 40 years when we have to move, this community will get a brand new plant at that time and will have the benefit of the 50 or 75 year life expectancy of a brand new plant. And that'll be, and so that does matter. And that is good economics and good fiduciary responsibility for the district, is investing in what we have now and then getting a new plant sometime in the future. It's sound. It's a decision that your board and the previous board supported. And, you know, it's the path we're on, and it's a good path.
Thank you for that. And can you also respond to, I'd like to hear the response to about the question about whether the city's billing includes the city side of.
Yeah, I know I was rambling in my, I attempted to address that. So yes, the treatment component of, so if you saw those numbers, they were like $33 to $37 if we look at that graph. Our rate for treatment, what we bill a single family residence is $25.74, I don't have it right in front of me, $25 and change. And so those 33, like the city of Arroyo Grande charges $9 plus a little bit for volume used on the collection side. And so that's added to the bill. Oceano also has a charge, and Grover also has a charge. And so those rates shown in that graph is the full cost for a resident in our territory, and it's not just the district's expense. So we did not, yeah, it's not a bait and switch. We didn't, there's no smoke and mirrors on that. It's fully weighted.
Thank you so much for that. So with that, I'll bring this back around to us, and I will start with Director Austin for commentary.
Well, I already said I was very disappointed in this, the change of things, but I do understand we need to move forward with this project, and I think any delay in rebidding or anything would end up costing more money. So, you know how what I thought about it in the beginning, and I still feel that way. But I don't want to do anything to stop the forward movement of where we are now, and get this project going. So that's about all I have to say.
Director Lee, excuse me. I thought you said it was all. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Okay. I just I was disappointed in what, you know, I was hoping that what I thought would happen wouldn't, but it did. So that's all. Thank you.
Director Lee.
Thank you. Yeah, and I'll echo the fact that I am disappointed in the fact that we only got two bidders, it is a unique bidding environment, and I think the fact that we lost two bidders due to a liability protection from the district standpoint is very notable by our staff and by our legal team to do that, because that is a protection that is built into our bids. I'm disappointed in the bidders who didn't pay attention close enough to that at the very beginning, so that we could have known that they weren't going to participate significant time ago, because none of this has changed in the time that we did our pre-qualification. So I'm not disappointed in our staff at all when it comes to that. I'm disappointed in the contractors for not having paid attention to the documents that were presented to them. And while I do appreciate Mr. Christian's comments, I don't agree with them. And so I do see a benefit to the community workforce agreements in the fact that this is a publicly bid contract, and a number of those concerns that were expressed in the agreement would have been placed upon the project, and this was a way to ensure that those protections were to the benefit of the district as well as our ratepayers. So I'm supportive of moving forward with this action this evening, realizing it is a step in the process, and that there will be potential significant uncertainties if we were to reject the bids and move forward with rebidding. So while not under the best of circumstances, the long-term work that we've done to get us to this point has put us in a solid foundational position, and I'm ready to proceed to the next step when after your comments.
Thank you. And I do have some comments, especially since I'm continually attacked for the decision that I made. So I do feel that it's important to respond. And the way that it was characterized is a, quote, craven desire to support big unions. And I want to be really clear, and I have been clear all along, that we get so few opportunities as public servants to be able to truly create jobs in our area. And especially given where we're at right now, I absolutely stand by firmly asking for local hire as part of what we're doing here. And I also acknowledged at the beginning of this that there would be a slight increased cost. And what I'm very concerned about is that the changes that are in the bid structure and the unexpected higher bids will be fully blamed on the contract, on the community workforce agreement. And that I just know that's going to happen because the bids came back higher and they're going to say, see, I told you so, or this is what I thought was going to happen. I told you. And that's just not the case. And there is a piece of it. And like I said, that is to me an investment in our community, and those dollars will return to the taxpayers in the form of those dollars staying in our county. So that is a very fiscally responsible decision from my point of view. Now, I did want to kind of bracket some of these differences because I see them differently. So of the ones that we said we couldn't really quantify and we kind of had to guess on, two of them were the endangered species monitoring and the pandemic cost. And both of those could be really characterized as government regulation. Even though the pandemic isn't the fault of the government, but the regulations associated with it and the costs associated with that, that's really difficult to see. And so that's a big piece. The materials are the materials. And without a doubt, that goes up over time. It's going to change as we go forward. So that's kind of its own category. And then the other two, and I'm very sorry to see that Mr. Kristen dropped off the call right as I started speaking about this part right here, that the last two are the community workforce agreement and the pre-qualification process. And I would characterize the two of those both similarly as they are investments. And the pre-qual, I've already talked about the investment, about the community workforce agreement, but in terms of the pre-qualification, that's an investment too. And I understand Director Lee's disappointment, and I share it in the fact that two bidders dropped out. 40% of our bidders dropped out during the, or after the pre-qualification process due to issues here. I guess what I'm saying is if we had not done that, we would be in a world of hurt looking forward and not knowing what had happened in terms of getting back only two bids and making sure that those bids are legit. So that's a piece of the investment in the process that I think is important. Again, just like investing in the community. So I would characterize both of those as investments. So all of that to be said, I'm ready to move forward. I am disappointed in the difference, but I also know that what's out there in the world right now in terms of the cost of construction and things changing, it is escalating. It's escalating greater than what we're seeing here. So I am comfortable with that. And I'm comfortable with the investment that this district is making in our community. And with that, I'm hoping to have some forward movement today on this item.
So if folks are ready, I'll go ahead and make a motion that we adopt resolution number 2020-424, which replaces resolution 2020-423 for the execution, delivery, and sale of wastewater revenue certificates of participation and in increasing the maximum principal amount to $28 million.
I will second. Do we have any discussion? Okay, we have a motion and a second. Could we get a roll call, please?
Chair Ray Ressam?
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, everyone. Item 6C is authorized execution of updated contract language for WWTP Redundancy Project Construction Management Services with MNS Engineers Incorporated.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. The item before you, this should be an easy one. It is quite lengthy if you look at the attachments, but what's before you is really a replacement to bring the M&S contract into a USDA contract form. It is the same scope, it is the same fee. It is just moving to what's called the EJCDC format specifications, which is what the USDA requires. And we had previously let this before, and you'll see this coming back for Kennedy Jenks contract in the future. We're revising that currently. So it's recommended that you authorize the district administrator to execute an updated contract for construction management services for the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project with M&S Engineers Incorporated in the amount of $2,616,044. And I'm happy to answer any questions. You're muted, Karen. Yeah.
Let's check in with the board and see if anyone has questions. Director Lee, any questions?
No questions, just a brief comment. EJCDC contract format with the USDA really needs to be changed. And I know there's a number of agencies that are trying to do that, but it needs to be changed.
Would that we could affect that here. Director Austin, any questions?
I'm fine, no questions, thank you.
Nor do I. This is pretty administrative in nature. I'll ask Amy if we have anybody ready to speak. So I'll go ahead and open up public comment.
I see no one with their hand raised.
Okay, thank you. So we'll close public comment and bring it back around to the board for comment and action. I think we kind of all sort of commented. Does anyone want to hazard a motion?
I'll go ahead and make the motion that we execute the updated contract for wastewater treatment plant redundancy project construction management services with M&S Engineering.
And I will second that.
Any discussion? Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Can we get a roll call, please?
Chair Ray Russin?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Motion carries.
That might be the longest staff report for the shortest item. So I'm glad to see that going. This takes us to item 7, board member communications. Does anyone have anything they'd like to share at this time?
I have nothing.
And I just have two quick items, just a quick tongue-in-cheek follow-up to the fact that was the longest staff report for the shortest time. That is the beauty of the EJCDC contract form. But then my real comment actually boils down to the fact that on Monday night, the City of Gower Beach Council did approve a construction contract for a sewer extension along Highland Drive in Gower Beach. It is down in our industrial area, and it does bring in another a large chunk of industrial and manufacturing and other properties down in that area to connect to the sewer system versus staying connected to septic system. So that contract did get awarded. Construction is expected to be completed by the end of the fiscal year, and then folks have another year after that with which to connect. And so just a more of an FYI for Mr. Gents, if he's not already aware of it, that is moving forward.
There was no sewer system on Highland up in that area?
There is a component of it. This takes another, it was about half of that area was on sewer from about 7-8 years ago. There's another series of properties that are being added with this. And then also Highland Drive itself was not on sewer. They were on a series of septic systems. So this will replace those as well.
Great.
And the only thing that I will add before number 8 is I genuinely meant what I said in the earlier item, that this district has really moved leaps and bounds in the last couple of years of getting on track, out of the woods, and out of the headlines, and into just solid fiscal management and solid reporting, and as evidenced by the audits being on time, and we are continually demonstrating to the public that this is a really well-run facility, and I want to thank staff for everything that you do to make us look good in that. So thank you so much, and a happy Thanksgiving to everyone here, including all the people who are on the line and sticking with us all the way to the end. So everyone be safe, and that takes us to item 8, adjournment. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.